Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, my friends. This is Peter Paul Berzola with The New Shadow. Today, we're supposed to have Patrick Butler, the distinguished journalist from Chicago, who's covered a lot of things for many years. That's our theme, the March to the Scaffold, where we like to march some of these corrupt politicians. But anyway, what we're going to talk about today, as those of you who looked at the show, is some more political frauds, facts, and fiction. An interesting article, since Don't Ask, Don't Tell, I don't want to dwell too much on this, is in the news again. We're having more and more congressmen and media people come out for gay, lesbian, or homosexual, lesbian marriage in NAMBLA to be able to adopt children. Those of you who don't know what NAMBLA stands for, NAMBLA, it's an international group. I believe it was started in Holland, and it means a National Association of Man Boy Love, and it's also women, girls who women who like young girls. They don't get the publicity that they deserve, and it's well deserved and long overdue. But anyway, they're a pedophile organization, and there is a difference between pedophiles and pederasts. Pedophile preys on people, young children below the age of majority, and pederasts picks on young children above the age of majority, or at majority, 18 or 16 in some places. But, you know, I believe growing up in the late 50s and 60s that leave children alone. Let them grow up, and don't pick on them. Pick on somebody your own size if that's your you want to indulge in those things. And the issue is not what consenting adults do privately in the privacy of their home, apartment, or their tent, or as long as it's not the Boy Scouts involved. We keep the predators out of the pup tents. That's another issue. A lot of people don't realize that these people who advocate allowing open homosexuals in Boy Scouts, that the Boy Scouts have been hit also with millions of dollars of lawsuits because they have failed to protect the children in their charge when they're out camping or whatever. And they keep a data bank, I think it's in the southern states, where these people are listed, and I've talked to other scoutmasters, and they're very concerned about men coming in there and showing a suspicious interest in being a scoutmaster, and these things happen. But it's interesting that one of the notorious controversial lesbians here in California, a woman named Angela Bradstreet, she's no angel, British lesbian activist who came from Britain, and she said she had to leave because of her lifestyle or her family. It's not clear. Anyway, she tried to intimidate the entire legal community, the judges, the courts, the lawyers. When United Way defunded or was funding the Boy Scouts, and she tried to intimidate the entire legal community into defunding United Way. Yet she wasn't even, you know, had nothing to do with the Boy Scout, never been married, no children, nothing like that. But it just shows you how vicious and meddling these people are, and they have to be taken on, taken down, and taken out politically. You know, let them go back and do their lifestyle privately and leave us alone and leave children alone. That said, in the New York Times, surprisingly, in the op-ed page Friday, June 26, here's the title: the real mob at Stonewall. Now, those of you who follow the quote Stonewall story, in 1969, June 27 precisely, there was a riot at this bar in Greenwich Village in New York City, and the bar, it turned out, was mafia controlled. It was also a source for pornography. I mean, mafia is very big into this. And it's not only the Italian mafia, it's the Chinese mafia and the Russian mafia, who are also involved in pornography and this international sex trade. But anyway, the bar was serving alcohol to people, to patrons, quote, under 18. Now, in New York at the time, and I think it's still the case, that 18 is the drinking age, as it is in Quebec and some of the Canadian provinces, as well as one or two of the surrounding states. But typically, just like Wisconsin, the age is, I think, 18. Kids from Illinois and surrounding states would go there to drink, because, you know, even if they weren't 21, where 21 was the age in Illinois. I don't know if it still is. I'll ask Butler about that. But anyway, what had happened was a 17-year-old youth named, I think, Angel Rivera. He started the riot, and it wasn't about gay rights. It was about the ABC, the New York Alcoholic Control Board, trying to shut down the tavern because they were serving liquor to underage patrons. And Angel later confessed, now he underwent a transgendered operation, caught AIDS, and died a couple years ago. Before he died, he wrote the New York Times and confessed that the whole thing was a fraud and it was about the drinking, not about, quote, gay rights or anything like that. And I've mentioned this before, in Illinois, I think it was 1963, at the time I was a student, and I apprenticed with a journalist and went around and watched the police bust gay bars and, do other things Chicago police did at that time. And they busted a bar or a party in the Rush Street area of Chicago. Those of you familiar with Rush Street, it's like North Beach in San Francisco and 42nd Street in New York, Rittenhouse Square, I guess, and Lafayette Square in Washington, Rittenhouse Square in Philadelphia, places like that. Anyway, the son of a very prominent, powerful Democratic politician was picked up at that party, and he was separated from the rest at the Chicago Avenue police station. And his mother was called, and she just blew a gasket. And a little while later, this powerful politician informed his subordinates in the state Illinois state legislature to quietly pass a sexual consensual act for people 18 or over in Illinois. And that was 1963, 1964, and I think Governor Otto Kerner at the time signed the bill. So Kerner wasn't gay, but he was dirty, and he was the first in a long series of Illinois governors to go to federal prison. We've had George Ryan, who's in federal prison now, Walker, who was another Illinois governor, and Blago is facing that right now, facing federal prison. Anyway, that's how it happened. And this whole thing about Stonewall—it's one of the biggest political and media frauds in world history. And we also have the Matthew Shepard scandal. Jack Cashel discusses that in his book "What's the Matter with California: Cultural Rumbles from the Golden State: Why We All Should Be Shaking." It was published by Simon & Schuster a year and a half ago, and he is an established author and credible, very credible, unlike these propagandists. But anyway, people should realize that with the economy going the way it is, we should pay attention to the things that are important, and leave sexual things, practices to consenting adults in the privacy of their home or apartment or trailer, whatever. There's more important things that we should be worried about, what I call crotch politics. That's one issue. Now, the other issue is, for instance, did you know that a lot of the affordable housing money, much of it, has gone to, quote, these AIDS hospices? The problem with this is there are hospital beds that could take care of these people much cheaper, or let's say less cost. I don't want to use the term cheap. The other thing is that the people who start these AIDS hospices, they set up these bogus nonprofits, and when the patients die, is that you, Patrick? Hello? Somebody's
Hello?
Here. Patrick, hello?
Hello?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Who is this?
My name's Joe.
Okay, Joe, you're on the air.
Okay.
I'm still learning the system. Go ahead, what's your question or what's your comment?
Well, I want to listen to what your comments are regarding fraud.
Which fraud? I'm
you
on the. I'm talking about AIDS fraud right now, and or the HUD fraud. And we have another San Franciscan who was recently appointed. Her name is Carol Galante, G-A-L-A-N-T-E. She was an associate of Ian Donald Turner, who was the head of Bridge Housing. By the way, where are you calling from, Joe?
Montana.
Oh, okay. It's a beautiful state. My dad worked on a railroad there. But anyway, getting back to that, she was just appointed the deputy secretary or undersecretary for multifamily housing. Now, the problem was with Bridge here, we call it the path to graft. They had all these affordable housing projects, which they leveraged with banks, which are now in mortgage trouble, as you all know. And what's happened was media people got condos. One media person. Other people who weren't in the media but were politically or judicially connected also got deals. And that's one of the problems, because what was a good and necessary program, affordable housing, such as the public housing, which was started back in the 30s, has been destroyed. It's been infiltrated, ripped off. It's not been maintained. And you've seen, those of you who live in the major cities across this country, Igo Pruitt was destroyed in St. Louis, Cabrini Green in Chicago, Tyler Projects in Washington, D.C., which were connected to Ron Brown, the Secretary of Commerce in the Clinton administration. He was on that plane and went down in Croatia, and on the passenger manifest list was Ian Donald Turner. And people were saying, what is a San Francisco affordable housing builder supposedly doing on a plane going to Croatia? And, of course, there's a lot of controversy about how Ron Brown died, and, I'll leave that to other people to deal with. It's too long to get into here. But
Do you have any particular sources, favorite sources of yours that you go to in order to find out the corruption that's pretty prevalent, especially in Congress?
Well, I'm an extensive reader. I did work in the federal courthouse in Chicago. I started there, worked there a couple of years. I'm an extensive researcher. I'm a retired researcher, legal investigator, and I'm a voracious reader, and some people say I have an encyclopedic mind. But what I do is, I'll give you a hint. Now, I don't know how much affordable housing or nonprofit organizations you have in Montana, but here's the thing. All of these organizations which get public funds, they have to allow you to look at their 990s, the 501c3s, that's their designation. So supposing somebody sets up in Missoula, Montana, or Helena, an affordable housing project, they will get a nonprofit designation from the IRS.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can go in within office hours. Don't go in at 5 minutes before they're closing or on holidays and demand to slam a bang on the door and say, I want in and look at your 990s. And you should also be able to get these records from the officer in your state. Just about all the states, I think Wyoming is the only one that doesn't monitor and require some kind of reporting from nonprofit organizations that operate in their jurisdiction. But you should be able to get that from either the state attorney general, the charitable trust section, if they have one, consumer section. It depends on the state, the jurisdiction, and even Canada has these things.
But what do you recommend besides, walking in to...
Well, you can send them a letter. You can send them a letter, a FOIA letter, because they come under... if they get federal money, they're under federal public access.
I mean on the web.
Oh, on the web, some of the stuff, say you wanted to look up American Cancer Association, Google them and see, you might have to scroll through several pages because it's an old organization, and there will be some reporting somewhere of something they've done, and cross-check it, because people aren't always accurate.
Right. My question was a few minutes ago was, do you have any particular sites or, that are favorites of yours that would ferret out corruption in Congress? Because that's mainly what I'm interested in, because the lawmakers in Congress, to me, are the greatest bunch of thieves and traitors that, that exist in America. So,
You sound like you're from the East.
Hmm?
You sound like you're from New York or Boston.
Yeah, I wasn't born in Montana.
Okay, you got that. I'm not holding that against you, because you had Tammany Hall and you had the Green Machine in Philadelphia, Curley in Boston, and Kelly Daly in Chicago, and Prendergast in Kansas City. So, and we have it here in San Francisco. Burton, Brown, Burton, Feinstein, Blum, that Pelosi, that crowd. There are congressional independent groups, or some say they are, that do research,
an
and they
Congress,
do publish their...
I believe, and Judicial Watch. But outside of those two...
There's several. There's CREW, C-R-E-W. Some of their stuff is so-so. Some of it's very accurate. I'd recommend looking at it and cross-check. You know, if you see something at one website, see if you can find it at another, and if it's accurate. Because there's a lot of inaccuracy out there also, and people don't correct it. Like my particular beef is Snopes. I found out that these people, S-N-O-P-E-S, they...
Yeah, I know. They have a reputation for trying to track down what the truth is versus the versus fiction, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think it's more fiction than fact with them, and,
Right.
But especially on the Obama birth certificate, and that's we've discussed that. But those are good starters. But again, here's a tip: type in public corruption. I do a thing on my website, Public Corruption Watch, at amicusveritas.org. amicusveritas.org or verzola.com. verzola.com. That should bring you to the website faster. I'm also putting stuff up on my YouTube, Google, and Yahoo video. I will be putting up pictures of affordable housing rackets, a $10 million project named after an illegal alien homosexual.
Okay, what site will that be on?
Huh? That'll be on my YouTube. I have some stuff up there now. YouTube, you're familiar with that video website?
Yeah.
Okay, type in Amicus Veritas, A-M-I. C-U-S-V-E-R-I-T-A-S.
Yes, yeah, I'm going to go there to your site now.
Yeah, so that's one of them, and then I have a couple on Google and a couple on Yahoo. Depends, you know, sometimes it's hard to upload, and I'm still learning this stuff. But I would suggest that do a Google. They're very good at this, surprisingly. These guys are from Russia. This surprised me, but, you know, where information was difficult to get. Yeah, I'm sure you know that. But type in public corruption and a lot of stuff. Also, Free Republic out of, I think it's Fresno, California. Type them in. They've got a lot of stuff. Free Republic. And I will put something up on my Amicus site since you brought this to my attention, because people are more concerned right now about gay marriage and the mortgage fraud. Now, that's another thing. A lot of these so-called 501c3 affordable housing operators are doing 2 and 3 mortgages on property. They use substandard construction materials. They don't pay prevailing, I think it's Davis-Bacon Act, wages to the workers. They sexually abuse children. They threaten tenants.
Right. Did you say amicusveritas.org or .com?
.org. And it's all one word. amicusveritas.org, and you should be able to. And I have several up there. We're limiting our interest to voter fraud, which affects the election of politicians that you are concerned about, because some of these people got into Congress through massive vote fraud, and also in the California state legislature. In fact, a lot of people don't know this, but when Dianne Feinstein she was going to run for governor of California, but that didn't work out. And no San Francisco mayor since the 30s has ever been elected to the California governorship, even though we got a current mayor, Gavin Newsom, who thinks he's going to be the next governator, as they say. But what happened when she ran against Huffington back in 1996, there was about 150,000 fraudulent votes, and we investigated that at our website, Californians Against Voter Fraud. That's part of the subsite of Amicus Veritas. And we also expose corrupt judges. It's called JAWS, Judicial Accountability Watch Service. And then we have another one, American Military Poverty Law Project, which I'm very involved in, military code of justice cases, particularly here in California. So you got your choice, and that's pretty much what. And the nonprofits, which tie into several of these sites. So that's my limitation. And then I try to do eclectic things, as I described on the a blog talk site. Next week, I hope to have a rare recording of the original Le Marseillais, such as Bastille Week. And we hope that this well, it'll be ready to upload. So,
all right, I'm here on your site now, so I'll check it out.
Okay, well, thank you for calling in.
Okay, thanks.
And good luck. Now, okay, is somebody else calling? Okay, it's somebody else calling in. Oh, what happened here? Are we off the air or what? Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Uh-oh, something happened. Oh, great, 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 great. Oh, boy. Huh. I don't know what happened here, but we're going to try to get back on. Oh, no problem. Okay. No. Okay. Uh-oh. I don't know if we're going out or streaming or what, but something had happened. And I don't. Let's see what happens here. Okay. Okay. What happened here? Oh, okay. Okay. Well, hello. What's going on? Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Supposed to be on air. And I don't know what's going on here. Let's see what's happening here. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, switchboard here. Okay. Hello. I don't know if we're on air or what. What's going on? But I hope we're going out. And I don't know. So Patrick Butler's supposed to call in. And for those of you who are listening, our call-in number is 1-347-633-9620. So far there's no callers. So I don't know what happened. Maybe it was just a mistake on my part. But I would recommend to people that, try to call in on that number. And I hope this is going out over the air. It's not dead airspace. The other thing is, you know, you have a right. The gentleman who just called, Joe from Montana, beautiful state, you have a right to go into these organizations that get federal funds and within a reasonable hour and ask to see their financial reporting records, and you are allowed copies. I think it's up to 25 cents a page, and they can either copy it for you or provide a copy machine. But don't go in there and give them a hard time. Be polite, but be firm, because you're a taxpayer, you're a citizen, and you have a right to these records. So I would... you know, if you're interested and you're concerned, and a lot of people should be concerned now because of the financial situation. Millions of dollars, billions of dollars are going out for stimulus programs, and people aren't getting accountability. And we saw a case yesterday in Congress with Governor Rendell of Pennsylvania being grilled in Congress, and he seemed a bit belligerent and defensive about, you know, how the money's being spent or if it's being spent or what's happened to it. So these are questions that you should ask, and you're entitled to answers and full disclosure. You know, I always say that transparency seems to be, that's the new word now, but it's used when somebody uses it, especially if that person is controversial. It can be a politician or a media person. It seems that the transparency applies to your opponent or somebody, somebody else, but not you. So that's something you ought to be aware of, how language is used to manipulate public opinion. And it goes on all the time. By the way, did you know, you hear about these opinion polls that claim this, claim that. Is anybody, if you have doubts, you should call up these people and say, who did you ask? How did you pick the people to who you asked? Where can these records be verified? How many people were asked? And what were the type of questions? You know, when I used to do polling, I was questioned about who composed these questions. But, and when I was polled, I'd always give a more detailed answer and, than the stock answer that they were expecting. And I don't know if it was tabulated, because we have no way of knowing. This is something that you ought to be aware of about polling. And the most notorious polling mistake made was during the Hoover-Roosevelt election, when I think it was Reader's Digest that did a poll of who people were going to vote for president, or who would win the presidency, who would be reelected. And what they didn't, they called people who had telephones, but a lot of people didn't have telephones, and the people who didn't have telephones were the ones who voted for Roosevelt. So that gaffe is a classic, and it's an example of polling techniques, and who they ask, and how many people they ask, and how they ask are all very relevant. So that's something to keep in mind. The other thing people ought to be aware of is that there are in San Francisco, this is a mind blower. This is a city of less than 800,000. You know, a couple hundred thousand of these people are of questionable legal status in this country. By that I mean they may be illegal immigrants or people who've overstayed their residency or whatever. But anyway, we have in this town, and this is another thing that goes back to Donald Turner and Ron Brown and that whole crowd in April of 1996, that HUD and its Community Development Block Grant section had a national conference here in San Francisco at the Hilton Hotel, and they were trying to bar controversial journalists who wanted to ask some questions. And they were telling people the San Francisco model is what you should use when you go back to your cities and towns and rural areas. But what we now have in San Francisco, and it's incredible, is over 7,000 so-called nonprofit organizations. I call them non-taxpaying because they don't pay income tax on their profits, they don't even pay the withholding taxes to the government. There are liens filed against several of these organizations, and they get away with this. You know, and especially important if an employee files for unemployment compensation or disability insurance. If their employer took the money out of their paycheck and didn't remit it to the state and federal government, there have been problems. And not only that, it's a kind of theft, if you want to call it that. Racketeering, as one person called it. So that's something you ought to be aware of, that these things do happen with these nonprofits. Also the fact that increasingly we see these community organization, nonprofit organizations that have been infiltrated, and I said this on the Drew Rain show yesterday, a Marine's Disquisition, and he's on every day on Blog Talk Radio. And thanks to him, he persuaded me to come on to this network. It's a lot of work, folks. But I enjoy doing it because I enjoy passing on the information, because there's enough wealth out there. There shouldn't be. There are these people who think that it all should go to them and then they want more. Or, you know, they want it all and then some. That's one of my phrases. But what you should be aware of, that these nonprofit organizations often duplicate the work that could be done by one or a few. Not only that, the high salaries that these people, their lifestyle is just outrageous, some of them. They drive BMWs, Volvos, Saabs, Mercedes in a few cases. They have two and three houses. They get condos, at below market rates. And we've had cases here in the Bay Area where people have gotten HUD-subsidized housing and way below market rates through banks that they did deals with. In fact, the deputy director of HUD, a guy named Julian Fitzhugh, the highest-ranking black at the time, he had three condos that we know about, two in San Francisco and one in Richmond, California, and we don't know where else. But he was the head of HUD for the 9th district here, which is the 9th federal region. And I think it's, 11 states or so in Samoa, Hawaii, Samoa, that. But it's just incredible. It was a fluky thing how we found out about it. He didn't pay his garbage bills, so a lien was filed against him, and it showed up on the recorder's records. And those of you who are in real estate, if you want to have some fun, and some of these real estate offices, the county recorders, they have gone online. It's wonderful what the web and the computers have done for access to information. They have gone online. You don't have to go down to the recorder's or the county tax collector's office. You can type in whatever, like SFGov, which is San Francisco Gov, and then go to recorder tax collector's office and then keep following the links and the prompts, and you can type in somebody's name and find out if they have real estate. If they're involved in a lot of this mortgage manipulation. You know, they The media is reporting that the FBI is supposedly they must be overwhelmed with the amount of mortgage fraud that's going on, and it varies. There are people, for instance, in the affordable housing, what I call real estate racketeering, what I've seen in the last 25 years, is they will get they will put multiple mortgages on a piece of property and then not pay those mortgages, but the city where these properties are, like in San Francisco, the taxpayers are the ultimate guarantors. So if the Affordable Housing Corporation defaults or goes into bankruptcy, we haven't seen that yet, but it may happen yet, then the city which guaranteed the loans is on the hook. Oh, here's another thing for you people, especially in California, who are getting IOUs. I saw yesterday a warning from one of the major banks that they will, if you are a customer of that particular bank, and I suppose the, other banks which are expected to have customers who have IOUs, state IOUs, will come to the bank and the bank will give them the money. However, if the state does not make good within a certain amount of time on that IOU, then they're going to take the bank will take the money out of your account, and you'll be charged, and it might be a service charge or penalty because the state failed to make good on the IOU. Hopefully, that will not happen. I made a comment about prison guards, who are probably the biggest single employer union, and the one that has the most problems, especially in our prisons, that I don't think they're getting any IOUs. Also, the people who may be getting government checks, I understand that the government, federal government, guaranteed the money, so the money's there, and then the state will have to pay back the U.S. Treasury. So hopefully these issues get resolved. And I have somebody trying to call in here? I don't know. Anyway, hello? Is somebody trying to call in? Okay. I don't know. I'm still learning this system, so bear with me, folks. Hopefully we have it down by the end of July. But you should be aware of these IOUs and read carefully what your bank's instructions. I think it's all the same because, as you know, the banks are under a lot of heat, and some of them are running for cover, and they can't find the cover, with all the money that some of them have mishandled. But that's an issue. You know, another thing, you might see this, the Dresdner Bank, I think it is, a major German bank, has put up a sign, those of you who are concerned about, quote, the controversy over global warming. They put up a sign in Times Square in New York. It was on PBS about a week ago. And it's a countdown. It's like a green countdown doomsday clock. And it's about supposedly about all the carbon footprints and all of this that's in the air in all these countries, especially industrial countries like India, China, or in countries that are trying to get industrial. Somebody's trying to call in. Let me get him in. Let me get him in here. Hello.
Yeah, how you doing?
Patrick, oh, you're finally. Were you trying to get in early or just now?
No, you told me to call after 10 o'clock.
I'm glad my voice is going out. Hello. Well, I got a couple things for you. Is Chicago ready for reform?
It wasn't when Patty Baller said it wasn't, and I don't think it's ready now. As a matter of fact, I seriously doubt if the entire state is ready for reform. You know, we periodically like to revel in self-righteousness and calls for reform and all of that sort of thing. But the truth of the matter is we kind of like wallowing in the old ways of doing things. And I think it's time we stop being hypocrites and embrace the traditions of Bathhouse John Coughlin and people like that, because at least we knew where they were coming from.
You forgot Hinky Dink.
And Hinky Dink. I forgot Hinky Dink, Kenna. You know, it reminds me of the Southern politician who ran for governor, I believe it was in Alabama, and he said, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to say that I'm not going to steal. I'll steal, but I'll only steal with one hand.
Where was the other?
Well, the fact is that he got elected because the voters felt he was at least more honest than his opponent.
Well, you remember the mayor of Chicago, Al Capone's time. We talked about this last time. He ran into the Irish wards and said he'd punch King George in the nose if he came to Chicago. He got elected. What was his name?
That was Big Bill Thompson.
Bill Thompson. Not related to the governor. Was he related to Governor Thompson?
No.
Okay, just a common name.
No.
Patrick, I have a question. Is this true? I read somewhere that the water in Chicago was among the best in the country, the cleanest or whatever.
That's what I understand.
Okay.
I've been drinking it all my life, and I'm still here. So.
Maybe it's insulated you. You've immunized you.
But, no, Chicago may have many problems, but its water is supposed to be the best in the world. And I know the bottled water people don't want to hear that, but the truth of the matter is it's good for you.
Well, keep the politicians out of it. They'll dirty it up. Well, the reason I brought this up is that on BBC this morning, they were talking about this rural hamlet in Australia where the voters, small little town, hamlet, voted to ban all bottled water except for tourists.
Mm-hmm.
And in New York City, the restaurants supposedly are trying to ban serving bottled water.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just wondering, is this happening in Chicago? Is there a movement or in Illinois?
Not really. No. I mean, I've heard of it. And when I first heard of it being done in Australia, I kind of thought there was something about the Australians, besides their beautiful women, that I really liked. But the truth of the matter is, no, Chicago hasn't gotten around to that yet.
Not yet. I understand that one of the Blagojevich, I can never pronounce it.
Blagojevich's
people was convicted today or confessed yesterday?
He confessed, yeah. He's turning state's evidence.
Or is it federal evidence?
Well, states have, they call it, you know.
Oh, okay. And that,
but it is in a federal court, yeah.
Okay, so this is Patrick, the U.S. Attorney, Northern District of Illinois, prosecuting
mm-hmm.
him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, I understand in this morning's news that your brilliant Attorney General, the woman, Lisa Madigan,
yeah.
She is not going to run for governor or Senate?
Right. She's going to go for another term as Illinois AG.
Okay, now, she's one of the few honest politicians, can I say that, in Illinois?
I have probably known her for 12 years, and if these things go, I'd say she's pretty forthright.
Okay, well, now who do you think is going to run against Burris? Or will Burris drop out and they'll try to find somebody to run for that?
Personally, I think Burris is going to drop out. I think what's going to happen is that they're going to, make him an offer he can't refuse.
And if he does.
You know, some kind of a position.
Let's hope it's not a judgeship.
Something like that. I don't even know if he's a lawyer.
He is.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean anything, as you know.
Right. But, that's right. You do not have to be a lawyer to be a judge at some levels.
Right.
You do not have to be a lawyer to be on the U.S. Supreme Court.
Right, although it's traditional. Yeah,
it's
you're
traditional.
One of the few people. Right.
I've been waiting for that call from the president.
Well, you're much more honest than Madame Sotomayor, who I think is a closet racist, but we'll leave that alone for now.
That's a separate topic entirely.
Yes, we can deal with that. By the way, now, I was talking to a Cook County official on another matter, and we happened to get into the topic of, I said, by the way, what's happening to the Graylord investigation? And she said to me that these judges, Cook County judges, get on their dais, and they don't know if an FBI agent is in the courtroom, and they're shaking under their desk. Nobody can see it, but they're worried that there are going to be more of them indicted and prosecuted. Is that true?
Well, there's always the possibility there may be more. I mean, I haven't heard of any specific plans to go after any particular individuals.
Mm-hmm.
But
how many to date?
I'm sure they're out there watching.
And listening.
Mm-hmm.
How many judges have been convicted to date? And lawyers. I understand about 45.
I thought it was more in the neighborhood of about 35.
Okay, well, you know, you're being conservative.
That's about the only time I'm conservative.
Yes, we know. Patrick, now today or yesterday, the Attorney General of the state of Massachusetts has filed a suit against the federal government to overturn the Defense of Marriage Act and all that. How is this playing in Illinois, gay marriage and gay adoption of children?
Oh, it's not an issue because there's not that much vocal opposition to that sort of thing here in Illinois.
What do you mean?
I mean, in some states, all you have to do is mention gay marriage,
okay,
and you have a very, very strong lobby railing against it. Here in Illinois, at least in the Chicago area, nobody really gets their shorts in a knot over something like that. They really don't. It isn't that, I mean, gays are accepted much more in Chicago than they are in a lot of other parts of the country.
Well, Patrick, you and I were out there. I mentioned it earlier in the show that when a certain politician's son was busted or picked up in a raid on Rush Street,
mm-hmm,
and shortly, 6 months later, the state of Illinois quietly issued the first, passed the first, consensual sex act among, adults. And this was long before the Stonewall scam, which, by the way, if you pick up the New York Times, I mentioned this earlier, in the op-ed page, Friday, June 26, pull it up, The Real Mob at Stonewall. I forgot to mention also earlier that the author of this article, Lucien K. Truscott, is the grandson of General Truscott. Those of you who saw the movie Patton, there's a section in there, a clip where Patton chews out Truscott because he didn't push further. But that's his grandfather.
Now,
so I recommend this article. I don't want to get too long into
now,
the book.
I'm going to add something to that.
Good,
you may want to check, but I think those Truscotts are descendants of Thomas Jefferson.
That wouldn't surprise me. He seemed to have gotten around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But no, I was aware of that connection there, but a lot of people don't realize that the Truscotts, and I believe these are the Truscotts that we're talking about, who are among Jefferson's descendants.
Yeah, that's quite a military family because he wrote a book, Dress Gay, which is about a murder of a, quote, it was fiction, I guess, or whatever, of a gay plebe at
West Point. Yeah.
But this is the byline. A raid that galvanized gays was primarily a crackdown on the mafia. And I don't want to go any further on that part, but so people realize it's what I rank as one of the big political and media scams that ranks with Matthew Shepard and a few others.
Yeah.
So people should realize, and so we can move on and deal with real issues. Patrick, what's the state of the economy with all these stimuluses in your state?
I wish I could say it was better, and I wish I could say the stimuluses were stimulating.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, things are still pretty flaccid here. They really are. Real estate sales are down. When real estate sales are down, newspaper advertising is down. When newspaper advertising is down, you have layoffs. When reporters don't buy things, you get the idea, the whole chain, and it's just not going away.
Well, now when I lived there back in the 60s, there were, what was it, four? There was Chicago Daily News, Herald, Chicago American, or Herald American.
Right.
Tribune,
yeah,
and Sun-Times.
It was the Sun-Times, the Tribune, Chicago Daily News, which was internationally respected, and then there was the Chicago American, previously
first
known as the Herald American.
Okay. Kind of getting ancient. Yeah, I remember, and that died, and the only one, that's interesting, because Hearst bought out the San Francisco Chronicle, which was the DeYoung family, which were Dutch Jews. That's an interesting. They were media people who made their fortune by taking money from people not to publish certain derogatory information about those individuals.
Right.
That's how they built the Chronicle. And a lot, there are a lot of things that we don't go that far. Patrick, well then we discussed this last week. So would you reiterate what you would tell a journalism student about the state of the economy as far as the media is concerned, or print media?
Well, I think print media is going to have to reinvent itself. I think newspapers are still going to be around. I think news gathering is still going to be a viable profession, but it's going to be done a heck of a lot differently than, say, 15 or 20 years ago. When a lot of us got into the business, some newspapers, many of them, in fact, were still using hot type. This, of course, is gone by the boards. It's all computerized now. And so there are a lot of other aspects of this business that are going to have to be changed. I think we're going to see the day when you will have electronic newspapers mostly. It's already happening in some places. And probably within 5 years after that happens, everyone is going to kind of accept it as, you know, a given without much to do about it. But I think the important thing now is to be adaptable. Guys going into the business today have to realize that they're going to be going through the biggest changes in journalism probably in the history of the media. And you can't – look, this is not your grandfather's newspaper. And,
in some respects, you know, you wouldn't want it to be. Patrick,
you know,
now we
can still do yellow journalism, but you're going to do it electronically.
And with a lot of color that bleeds.
Exactly.
Well, the joke here about the Chronicle, or the Gay Cron, as they call it, or the Crown Rag, is that it's a lot of color but a little content, and the color bleeds, you know, and it's on recycled toilet paper, recycled Charmin. Patrick, we've heard it. You heard about the Washington Post a pay-to-participate scandal. You're familiar with what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Is there something similar, or is there a repeat a la Lingo, Jake Lingo, going on in Chicago?
Well, no. As a matter of fact, I haven't heard about anything. And what you're talking about is they would throw these luncheons, and you would basically pay for access to high-powered media types, political officials, other movers and shakers, and this would be an opportunity to get before them what you're trying to get before them. And, yeah, it's a shakedown, but I don't think shakedowns in this business are anything particularly new. You talked about the guy in San Francisco who used to charge people to keep items out of the paper.
Yeah, the DeYoung brothers.
Right. They're not the only ones.
Mm-hmm. That was 140 years ago.
Yeah. In New York at the turn of the century, there was a tabloid dealing strictly with scurrilous items. And what would happen is the editor of the paper would call you up and say, now, Peter, we have daguerreotypes of you with three underage girls or boys, whatever, in your own private love nest. Now, we were thinking of running it on the front page, but, you know, if you wanted to make a contribution to the paper, you get the idea. And this guy did very well for about 10 years.
Well, if it were San Francisco boys, they would probably welcome it on the front page.
Well, that's why I kind of said, you know, boys are.
Yeah, I know we get picked on. Well, you know, it's really funny. This city, a lot of people have come here from other places, and back, you know, in the 60s, the summer of love and all of that. And the older guys that got into real estate development, the Victorians, called painted ladies, not the kind that walk the streets, even stationary. No, I mean, there are people out there who don't understand what that is. I'm going to get into that on my YouTube site, Amicus Veritas, those of you who asked earlier on YouTube. I'll be putting up the new painted lady. This is going to be interesting. Just digress. People who come to San Francisco go to Alamo Square looking for the row of painted lady houses in multicolors. Well, there were so many tourists up there and so many problems that people decided to go back to rather conservative, bland colors. But we have a new painted lady, and it's appropriate because it's an ex-whorehouse. So I'll be putting up the pictures of this probably this weekend if I can get it up on YouTube.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I meant. Patrick, you If you were talking, I don't know if you go out and do lectures. I used to in the schools. If you were talking to a kid who wanted to go into politics, what would you tell him?
Ooh.
Based on your experience, and you got a lot of it.
Okay. Find a lot of rich friends. Okay. Better yet, get rich yourself, but don't spend your own money on a campaign. If you get rich yourself, your rich friends will be more receptive to you. But all kidding aside, you can't run a credible political campaign without money. And I happen to be of the school of thought that says only a fool would put up his own money to get elected to office. What you do is you find contributors who, for one reason or another, are ready to kick in. Now, you must bear in mind, and this is where the issue of old-fashioned integrity comes in, and there is a place for that in today's world.
You got to look for it.
If people start donating to your campaign in large amounts of money, bear in mind they want something in return. Now, some of these things you can probably give them in good faith. Other things, however, if they want a zoning change, let's say, which you can get them, but it is going to cause irreparable harm to a neighborhood, you have to take that into consideration. And sometimes you have to do what a lot of people have never learned to do, and that is to say no. You have to choose your contributors and you have to choose your allies very carefully, or else, at the very least, you're going to be in the embarrassing position of having to mail back their contributions.
Or not put in the refrigerator.
and that has happened. And, but don't think that you can run a shoestring campaign simply because your heart is pure and you have the strength of 1,000 men.
Or women.
The fact of the matter is, I don't care how pure your heart is, you better have a healthy bank account or you're not going to be able to convince people that they should elect you. It's a costly business today. It's getting to be a little bit like Rome in the second century, when you had to put on days and days and days of games and entertainment in order to woo the voters so that you could get a Senate seat. Eventually it got to the point where the emperor's spot itself was up for sale. And that was when the emperors would bribe the Praetorian Guards for their support. Now, the Praetorian Guards were kind of like the Roman Secret Service.
I knew you were going to say that.
But the truth is that the Praetorian Guards, without their support, you weren't going to get anywhere. So what you would do is, when you became emperor, you would give them, I think it was like 6 months' salary, supposedly as just a gift to the Praetorian Guards.
Patrick,
the tradition lives on, incidentally, in Rome today, where when a new pope is elected, employees of the Vatican are given a month's salary.
Mm. Yeah. Oh,
it's not bribery or anything. It's just a tradition.
And it ain't Peter's Pence.
No.
Patrick, are any people clamoring for term limits in Illinois?
Oh, they do periodically, but you know, we have term limits in Illinois and everywhere else. They're called elections. I find it rather interesting that a lot of the people that are screaming for term limits, when you ask them whether they voted for such and such a person the last time, or if indeed they did vote, they say, oh, I don't vote. Oh, I don't want to be part of that dirty process. But they want term limits. They refuse to use the tools which are already there. And, then they want this added thing. Personally, I think term limits are, you know, a little redundant. If you don't want somebody in office, and if enough people share your opinion, they're going to get turned out of office.
But, you know, look at your mayor. I mean, even his father, Richard the First, and we don't have Richard the Third yet.
Right.
But anyway, it's pretty hard. Well, I mean, when you have a machine like the Kelly Daly machine.
Not that much of a machine today.
Oh, really?
Well, it's not. The Democratic machine today in Chicago
Cook County?
Is largely a figment of nostalgia and imagination. I can't remember the last time Mayor Daley appeared at a campaign rally to get out the vote to elect, you know, aldermen who were supportive of his program.
Those are city councilmen, for other people who don't know what they are, what we call board of supervisors out here. So
okay.
People who don't know, they're selectmen.
Yeah. And I can't recall the last time. He's politically uninvolved.
Now that's Richard II.
We're talking about Richard II. Richard I, you know, of course, was both mayor,
mm-hmm.
and he was chairman of the party, and he was very active in selecting candidates and supporting them and getting them elected. It should be pointed out, however, that much as we might deride the old Democratic machine, it was a two-way street. They expected loyalty of the people that they chose and the people that they hired. At the same time, they gave loyalty. They provided the troops to get you elected. If you had a city job, they did all that was possible to give you some job security. And they did expect, however, you to go out and ring doorbells at election time. But it was not a one-way street like it is today.
Now you have a lot. Now, how big is the? How influential are you? Have more ethnics like the Hispanics? I imagine you've got some Russians. We got a couple minutes more, Pat. And that's the garbage truck, and they're not coming for me. But we have private garbage people here, like Chicago. But are the ethnic groups, are they becoming more powerful, more prominent, more influential?
Hispanics especially are becoming extremely powerful. Some of your Asian groups, like the Koreans, have been increasingly vocal in recent years. The polls have kind of dispersed from the largely Polish wards so that they have had a hard time getting Polish aldermen and Polish state representatives elected because they don't have that political, that concentration of political power that they had only a few years ago. One of the reasons Alderman Mike Wojcik, who was a very popular Northwest Side alderman, is not in the city council anymore, is because his Polish political power base eroded. They gerrymandered the ward. The ward changed. It became very heavily Hispanic. And Mike was called downtown, and he was told that it might be a good idea for him to announce he is not going to run again. And then they gave him a job with the CTA.
Chicago Transit Authority. We've mm-hmm. got a minute left, Pat. So you think that a college student or high school student who thinks he might want to be president or senator someday had better look at his options more carefully?
Well, I think if a person really has the fire in the belly that this is something that he or she wants to do, I think they should do it. I just think they should go into it with open eyes.
And open hands.
Yeah, realizing this is not Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Right.
The fact that you've got some good ideas is fine, but you also need the wherewithal to make it happen. Remember, Barack Obama did not get from community organizer on the South Side to President of the United States by being starry-eyed. He got it by using his community organization training to build step by step. He became a state representative, and then he became a U.S. senator, and then he ran for president. But it was a very, very carefully charted out course. I had the opportunity about five years ago when he was a state senator in Springfield. I went down there to cover a story, and I ran into him coming out of the state capitol. And we talked for about 45 minutes about a lot of things.
Pat, we've got a few seconds, but
yeah.
Let's do this another show.
Mm-hmm.
It's always fun. People like your rich, mellifluous, your Macbeth voice.
Well, thank you very much.
or Shakespearean stonor tones. But let's do this again, and I'll talk to you privately.
Okay.
We've got a couple of seconds. So,
sounds good.
So take care, and
okay.
We'll talk soon. And thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure.
Yes. This is Peter Paul Verzola with the new Shadow Political Exposés. Facts, Frauds, and Fictions. Thank you for listening, and tune in next week. We hope to have those tapes ready of the original Le Massier to honor our French historical heritage. Thanks again, and tune in to Drew Raines, descendant of General Butler, not this Pat Butler. So thanks again for listening. I got to run, and we'll hope to get all the technical things out worked out. Thanks for listening.
Peter?